Hello, welcome to another edition of Waldman's Words, where my voice sounds like crap. I was at Warped Tour. I talked a lot. It sucks. But this episode is definitely not going to suck. We've got John Oakes on the show, and I just want to give a special, special shout out to Mike Cubillos, my business partner with the band Stringer, my friend, my homie, publicist, manager, father, husband, my hero. So thank you, Mike, for orchestrating this. And thank you, John, for doing this call. It's really appreciated. The next few weeks on Adobe are going to be pretty cool. But next week, actually, is July 4th. But when this airs, July 4th will have already happened. So I'm not going to be in the studio on July 4th. But I will on July 11th, which also happened. It's crazy. Time is weird. Ryan Aceto, who works in the country space managing. So we'll learn a lot about that. I don't know anything about country music or management. So I'm really, really excited about that. And again, I just want to say I'm really excited that John Oakes is on the show. I think that we're all going to learn a lot from him. And I'm one of we're all. The following week after that, we have Jasmine Valencia on the show. That's going to be a good, exciting show. And then after that, I'll just give you one more. We've got Maggie Kunin, who works at Hopeless Records. So we have a hodgepodge of people on Waldman's Words, mostly behind the scenes people, so that you can learn something. So hopefully it'll make you freeze. You'll see what I did there later. If you're in Anchorage, Alaska, where you're definitely freezing most of the year, or some of the year, or a little of the year, and you wanted to become an artist manager, maybe you're going to learn something from Mr. Oakes. I think you will. The last episode that we just had, JJ Kassiri, he's a booking agent. So if you're in another subsidiary of Alaska, subsidiary, oh my God, I've been in music too long. If you're where Sarah Palin lives in Alaska, I don't know if it's like Wasilla or what have you, you might have learned something from JJ. We're going to learn something from John. And Walden's Words is on every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Sunday mornings bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time. And go on iTunes, the podcast app, subscribe. It's free. Go on adobe.com, stream every episode. It's free. I said this the last episode, and I know this specifically because I just recorded it, but we cannot do this without you. We can't. Every single person who listens, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to Emily Burke, the best assistant on the planet. I'm grateful to everyone at Adobe. And I'm grateful to you, John Oakes, the word freeze, Mr. Freeze, Mr., Mr. Belding, and Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Belding. Stick around for Waldman's Words with Mr. John Oakes. Hello. I just added John Oakes on Facebook. And now I'm speaking with John Oakes on Adobe.
Scott, how are you today? It's great to be speaking with you.
I'm really happy despite my voice sounding like crap. I was at Warped Tour on Thursday and I did a lot of talking. And today I'm actually doing back-to-back episodes. I just had JJ Kassiri on and now I have you. And after that, I'm driving back to the office. So dreading traffic, but aside from that, I'm great, dude. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I love that you mentioned the Warped Tour. I have a great experience personally over the years with the Warped Tour and Kevin Lyman, the founder, and have enjoyed a handful of summers out on the road years ago with the Warped Tour. And it's kind of a sad but exciting chapter in the Warped Tour's career and history this year.
They're going out with a bang, and I can tell you that in 2006, my old band, The Sage Drive, played some dates on the Smart Punk stage, and it was amazing, and I've been going pretty much every year since 98, so Warped Tour is ingrained in me, and it's ingrained on the song Rock Show by Blink-182, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, I would, and so 2000, I'm trying to think, I think 2005, I was out as the tour accountant and tour manager on the Warped Tour in 2005.
So that was the biggest year. You were out. That was the biggest year of Warped Tour history. I read the Billboard article. That was Fall Out Boy, All American Rejects, My Chemical Romance, Offspring. That was the big year ever. It was amazing.
I was there. I know.
Wow.
And maybe that's a perfect way. I'm sure we can kind of segue into some other details. But since we're talking about Warped in that year, it was an absolute amazing year for the tour. And I have a very, specific memory when we were in Detroit, just outside of Detroit, and the football stadium, the Superdome. We had the show in the
Pontiac.
Parking lot of the Superdome.
Pontiac? Or the Silverdome? Like, because I went to school in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Yeah, no, it's okay. I went to school in Ann Arbor, Michigan, so I'm very in touch with Michigan. I love the Mitten, and I want to hear about Warped there because I've never been a Warped in Michigan.
I think we had 33,000 people or 30 some odd thousand people come to the show that day. And probably 60 or 70% of them walked up and bought tickets the day of, where it was a really healthy show with advanced ticket sales, probably, 10, 12,000 tickets sold in advance, if my memory serves me correct.
That's a lot.
And we could not get people into the venue fast enough. And I have a particular memory, like the Silverdome, right? That's the football stadium. I think they had decommissioned the stadium at that point. They moved into the new dome. We were operating.
Silverdome is where WrestleMania 3 was, I believe, with Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan. So, Pontiac. Yeah, it's a big place.
Yeah, and the ticketing office was in the birth of the building, and I would go down to the birth of the building and consign, a couple thousand tickets, like as fast as they could print tickets out of the ticket machine, and run them back up, jump on a golf cart, and we pulled people out of the office that weren't ticket sellers, from the production team to sell tickets. Kevin Lyman and I were sitting in the parking lot on the back of a golf cart, like we were creating lines and creating entrances to get people in as fast as we possibly could so they didn't miss their favorite bands and whoever else was playing.
Kevin cares. I just want you to say that he was a guest on the show, actually, one of an earlier guests. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. I guess let's just say you owned a movie theater. You should know how to operate the popcorn machine. You should know how to operate the projector. I still see Kevin Lyman picking up trash before a venue, outside the venue. And he does not have to do that. So
but he cares.
He cares so much. He really does. And that's why I believe, Warped has, even towards the end of its run, which is really sad, has had a lot more causes associated with it than when it first started. So it's cool that you were part of the biggest one. And in Michigan, I bet it was so gross, sticky hot then that you're probably still melting.
I don't even remember the weather. We were so busy just trying to get people in to have a good time and getting people into the show. But yeah, you're right. I've been in the Midwest enough that you're probably right that
disgusting.
I've blocked that part of the memory out.
I can tell you because I went to U of M, as I said, and basically there's like 2 months a year where I'm like, where did you come from? Because people are wearing like shorts and T-shirts and stuff because it's either disgustingly hot for a little bit or disgustingly cold. So when I moved to LA in 2003, I stayed with a buddy in Indiana, in Bloomington. And I'll never forget this. It was in late August. I took a shower and then I leave his house. And within 3 seconds, I'm soaked in sweat. Yeah. Disgusting, yeah. Humid, gross sweat.
You and I have similar stories and backgrounds. So I moved to Southern California in May of 2002 from St. Louis.
Whoa, a year before me, man.
And it wasn't until, I think a year later, I grew up in the Midwest, so I didn't know anything different about humidity. Like, it was just normal. What happened in the Midwest with the humidity was normal. Then I moved to Southern California, where there really is no humidity, and the weather, is by textbook definition perfect. And I come back to Missouri to visit my family, and I think I landed, get picked up in the airport, drive home, and then we walk from the car to the house. I left my bags in the car so I could hurry up and go in and hug the family and say hello. And then I walk, a few minutes later, walk from the house few steps out to the car, back with bag number one, back out to the car, back into the house. And on my second trip, I wiped sweat off the back of my neck. And then, and I had this just epiphany style moment where now I understand the difference between the weather and the climate in Southern California and the Midwest, the humidity.
It's disgusting. It is disgusting. So let's make this positive, because I could have a show called Waldman's Wet Humid Words for a really long time, and everyone listening would get soaked in shame. So let's change this a little bit. So St. Louis, I remember my band used to play the Creepy Crawl, and my band used to play Wash U and played Warped in St. Louis, which was amazing. So let's talk about, did you grow up in the STL?
Absolutely. So I'll give maybe a little bit of context and background about myself, and then I'll answer that question.
Creepy Crawl. Creepy Crawl.
So I was born, I often describe myself as a mutt of the United States. I was born on a Navy base in Charleston, South Carolina, bounced around just a little bit, and then landed in St. Louis. My parents were from there originally, so when my dad got out of the Navy, I grew up in St. Louis. Middle school, you know, elementary, middle school, high school in St. Louis. And during I think right before I went into high school, my childhood best friend was a musician, played, you know, in the school bands, you know, in elementary school and middle school, would sing and play guitar and so on and so forth. And we started like, you know, most adolescents, you know, that started skateboarding and riding BMX bikes, and skateboarding really became like that first real passion or core, you know, in my life, and in music was right there alongside skateboarding. And then as we got a little bit older, one summer decided that we were going to start a band. I'd never played had zero music skill in my body other than I like to sing along to songs, and went to a pawn shop, bought a drum set. You know, my childhood best friend and I started a band in the garage and then moved to the basement of his house.
What was the band called?
Man, I don't even, we had so many different names. I think like every day the band name
Mr. changed. Freeze? Ha 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 ha. St. Louis Blues? I don't know. I'm just you know, riffing.
And I'll connect those dots real quick. So I played drums for a little bit and then quit. It was like, I gave the drum kit to my best friend, said, you know what? I am more of the entrepreneur. I've always, you know, have been that way. I started my first business when I was 3 years old, selling seashells and rocks on the beach in Charleston, South Carolina. You play music, I'll do the business of the band. And this is before I knew what the term manager was. I'll do the business of the band.
I mean, I think most people, like, I'm just going to freeze you, haha, for a second. But I'm an artist manager. I pay my bills managing producers and artists. And this radio show is awesome and I love it, but I can tell you that most people don't know what a manager does. And when people ask me, I don't know, I have to talk for a really long time. And I sometimes say doctor, lawyer, therapist, mom, nag, 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 nag. My mom has no idea what I do, but she knows that like my band should open for Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. So there you go.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, for everybody, you know, I guess listening and interested, the way I have started to describe over the years a manager of a band is like being the CEO of the business of a band with the way that bands are structured. And then, but at the same time, you said, you know, mom and babysitter, you know, caregiver for the musicians that are involved as well. So there's a much more dynamic role outside of just being the business operator of the band, and, you know, go from there. And so as I, you know, I guess my career, you know, progresses, we, you know, the music in high school becomes a little bit more serious. We're promoting shows at the Creepy Crawl. So I brought it back to your point.
Damn right you are. I love that venue.
So I'm, you know, a school skipping truant, you know, skateboarding music fan, you know, working with my best friend's band.
Ludo, St. Louis. Sorry. Got to give them a shout out. My God, they're amazing.
And I mean, I don't know if I know them or not, but I'm going to look them up after this.
And story of the year then? Would that be like?
So I'll fast track. You hit the nail on the head.
Wow.
So my childhood best friend is Dan, the lead singer.
Marsala. I saw the 10-year tour for Page Avenue in LA, and I've been watching them since. I mean, I heard they were Big Blue Monkey, I never saw that, but I saw some backflips. I think the first time I saw them, how about this, Bill? It was in LA. It was 2004, and it was Letter Kills, who I loved. My Chemical Romance.
Letter Kills.
Oh,
yes.
You did? Well,
yes.
One of my favorite
bands of all time.
Dude, so freaking good. Island, the Bridge, one of my favorite albums of the last decade. I wish more people liked it. Then, and the crowd in LA wasn't into it at the Wiltern. I was. Then My Chem was next, 2 of 4. And this is when Three Cheers was out and they were getting huge. Gerard had to have a bodyguard. I remember. I saw it. And then Direct Support, Lost Prophets. Think about them. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was 2004, the Nintendo
and
Fusion.
Then,
I was at that
story
show.
Of the year.
You were there, I was there.
So I was there. But I was there as a fan and a guy in the band, The City Drive, just loving that. So there you go.
Nice. That, so The City Drive, I remember.
We were on Columbia. Drive. Yeah, that's what I used to do. Yeah.
Yep. Nice.
And now I'm talking to you, so go figure.
There we go.
I made it. So wait, yeah, Nintendo Fusion. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm ADDJ with this stuff. And we go all over the place. So I guess let's go back to... I mean, were you friends with Dan growing up, like pre Big Blue Monkey?
Absolutely. That's when I was telling the story. You know, Dan and I, the first time Dan and I met, he was skateboarding with one of the other guys in the neighborhood, and he lived, you know, a couple of blocks away. And so it was that point when your world, at least in Missouri for me, you know, it was like light to light, stop sign to stop sign, like couldn't cross the street. And Dan lived on the other side of the street. So I had seen somebody else with a skateboard in the neighborhood. And so I ran out, got my skateboard and went down the road, crossed the border that I wasn't supposed to cross and met Dan. And we became friends and we were friends for years. As I mentioned, we started our own band together. We skateboarded together. We, you know, grew up together. And then throughout his varied music career, I helped with the business. I helped, you know, promote the shows, do the sponsorship, book the shows, trade shows, really did that to the
point
where
stuff.
We...
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and to the point where, you know, when I was in high school, I think right at the point, there was a point when I couldn't even drive, 15 years old, and Ryan, the guitar player for Story of the Year, would show up at the bus stop that Dan and I were both at. We would ride the same bus to school, and he would pull up and pick us up, and we'd skip school and go to the guitar shop, or we'd skip school and go wait in line down at the Creepy Call or the Galaxy or one of these for a show that we were going to go see that night.
Sounds like a story of the year.
Yes, it became that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Zing.
And so we would, you know, we moved in May of 2002. I moved with the band to California and, you know, long story short, got a record deal, sold a couple million records throughout there.
Maverick, right?
And
was it Maverick? I'm just like trying Maverick, to remember.
Yeah, the initial signing was Maverick, Madonna's subsidiary at Warner Brothers, with under Guy Osiri at Maverick. And that's Page Avenue came out.
Yep. And I think their follow-up, by the way, for the record, In the Wake, I believe Steve Evitz did it. I think it's underrated. The harmonies are sick. So just going on record. And I like Black Swan. I wasn't honestly that into The Constant, but I'm going on record to say that In the Wake was amazing. There you go. Thank you.
So, yeah, I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head. I agree.
I've hit several nails on several heads today, and I will fuck up a few too.
So we... I guess from there, you know, and that was the start of my career with those guys. You know, I started, you know, I was always the kid hustling stuff. I was backpacking bubble gum into school and illegally selling bubble gum, raking leaves, snow, however I could.
Wait, there's snow in St. Louis? It gets cold there?
Yeah.
What?
Not quite as much as what you get in Michigan.
No, but it's still cold. It's colder than it is here. I mean, are you LA based now, like still, or are you where?
South Orange County. I've never lived in LA proper. I've always landed in
Is that like
South
Mission
Orange
Viejo?
County.
Like, I'm trying to think.
Yeah,
like, okay.
Laguna Hills is really where I've spent the majority of my time. My office for years was in Laguna Hills and Aliso Viejo.
Wow. I was in Coronado, actually, this weekend. So we drove through that. And, no, I've been in L.A. since 2003, and with the exception of touring. So, anyway, I guess – so, story of the year. What else? I mean, besides them, because I could honestly have a whole show about Page Avenue. But what else? I really can. I love that record. I really do. Story of the Year is like legitimately a band I like. Like, I'm just going to go to my iTunes right now because I actually pay for music, believe it or not. Because if you don't buy music, then you shouldn't complain that. Anyway. But so yeah, I have Story of the Year on my phone because I love them. That's
Love
it.
it. Love it. I have Story of the Year tattooed on my arm, or at
Why you
least
gotta
Page
one up
Avenue.
me? Why you gotta one up me with that? That's messed up, dude. I have no tattoos, but I'm gonna get in the wake of determination on my neck right now.
There you go. That's a good first tattoo to get.
My wife would murder me. Anyway, so
So my career kind of started, throughout all my adolescent childhood, entrepreneurial endeavors landed. With working with my childhood best friend's band. And the way I think the short story that I'll tell is when I was in high school, I would skip school, sell sponsorship to shows that we were promoting in St. Louis at the Creepy Crawl in the Galaxy and Mississippi Nights. Go back to, skip school on Tuesday, go back to school on Wednesday, skip school on Thursday. And I would go down to the radio station, like 105.7 The Point, and I would buy radio ads and go to Kinko's and print flyers. And it's the same thing I do today. Just more rows, more columns, more zeros.
Hopefully.
And yeah.
Not but not
So
zeros like 0.0000, like more zeros. Like
yeah, just
zero to
more, yeah, bigger
hero.
numbers. Yeah, bigger numbers, more people, and so throughout, I've been extremely fortunate, throughout my career to work with amazing musicians. We've talked about Story of the Year and Letterkills and Head Automatica and Glassjaw
Dude,
and
Head
other
Automatica,
bands.
I saw, I'm from Long Island, so Glassjaw, I went to the Silence release show. And I loved Decadence by Head Automatica. I really did. And I remember it was the Bronx, Head Automatica, Atreyu, and The Used at the Wiltern, I think that same year. And I was at that show and it was sick.
And it's so great to hear because I that record I worked with Daryl Palumbo for a number of years in Head Auto with Head Automatica and with his side to Glassjaw, and we had a great run and experience, taking the opportunities to work with, the different musicians that I've been extremely fortunate to work with. And then my career evolved a little bit in the mid 2000s, like after, when I guess when the recorded music business really the bottom started to fall out with the selling of CDs.
What's a
And
CD, dude? What the hell are you
exactly,
talking about?
it's a
What's a, what?
coaster for a
Yeah, well,
bar.
the NoFX have a record called Coaster for that reason. Again, I'm gonna go back to my wife. I have so many CDs and she's not happy. And I say, because I want kids and I want my kids to open them like I open my parents' vinyl. So I defend CDs and bands on tour still sell CDs, but Best Buy pretty soon won't. And
Yeah,
I think that's a good segue to ending this for the first half, because believe it or not, we're almost done with the first half. What do you think about the state of the industry in terms of physical media, in one word or less? No, quickly, just whatever you want to say. It's your job.
it's almost non-existent,
It's pretty
right?
lame, right? Yeah, I mean, actually, vinyl is bigger than it's been in a while, but yeah, it's pretty non-existent.
From a collectible and a cool standpoint, I think it is, to the core fans. But I have a pretty strong feeling, technology, right? We're not gonna the market and in the evolution of technology makes music better in a lot of ways. The monetization of music, and I believe musicians should be compensated. They should make money. It's a
No
big part of the
question.
business.
No question. I still can't believe that people treat artists like they're useless and they should just be doing it. I mean, if no, I could have an entire series of shows on this, but keep
Yeah.
going.
And so really I think the advancement of technology, really, even if you go back to, 25, 30 years, recording music was really difficult. It was expensive. You did it to tape. You had to go to the studio. You had to have a producer. There was gates through distribution, through record labels, through radios. And I believe the current state of the music industry, it's a lot more accessible. Anyone that wants to make music can go to Guitar Center, order on Amazon, an inbox or a plug-in for their phone to hook their guitar up to it,
and download an app and record music and make music. And then at the same day, publish it on Facebook, on Google, on Instagram, on YouTube, upload it to SoundCloud, upload it to, you know, any
TuneCore,
number
TuneCore,
of digital
right?
distribution platforms.
Anywhere. You can have it on iTunes within a few days. It's nuts.
And it's unbelievable. For so many years, you know, through kind of the modern age of music, I'll call it, mm-hmm. that there were so many gates and restrictions. And I love that the creative freedom of the gates and restrictions is off. Like you can be whatever musician you want to be, but it's affected the market where there's more micro ecosystems or micro groups of consumers, you know, people that are into certain things. Because the media, radio, TV, you used to be able to break a band. And now it's, you know, less and less and less. Not to say that radio and traditional media doesn't have a major impact because there's still a ton of influence from that. But every single day, it's less and less traditional media, print radio, TV, and more digital podcast apps, you know, digital service providers and things of that nature that allow music to be accessible to the world. You know, what's happening, even I think Korean pop is a great example.
Oh my God, that's huge.
And someone just recently had a conversation in a company. We just produced a big K-pop show with SM Town in Dubai. So in the Middle East, had a Korean pop music festival that tens of thousands, you know, over 10,000 people attended. And somebody asked, well, how do people find out about the music? Well, YouTube and the internet.
Yep.
That's how they find out about the music.
Well, that's how same they
way,
do. They
same
do.
Way that 50
Zine
years
showed
ago,
me.
Found out about the Beatles, right?
Well, but oh, my
50
God.
50 years ago, it was radio, and you could only listen to 3 radio stations, and they pummeled your face with the Beatles, so you love the Beatles.
Yep. Well, we're going to cut this short and come right back. My mom has 2 concert trump cards, Shea Stadium Beatles show, which I think is better than the Letterkill show. Sorry, I love Letterkills. And Woodstock. My concert trump card is I saw at the drive-in open for Jimmy Eat World on the Clarity Tour. What would be your concert trump card?
Oh, man, there's so many. I was just talking about an experience that I had seeing Van Halen with Sammy Hagar in New York City. In 2004, I think it was 2004, 2005, when Sammy Hagar rejoined the touring unit of Van Halen. And I guess it's relevant because my company just announced we're working with Sammy Hagar. We have a show in Huntington Beach, October 6th with Sammy Hagar. So there's kind of this legacy thing for me as a individual in the music business. And then to be able to work with, you know, some of the icons and legends, you know, that we've talked about that have had much influence, but working, we're doing a show with Sammy Hagar, a beach party and a car show on the beach in
I went to Cabo Wabo or Cabo Wabo in Cabo, and yeah. I can tell you that I had fun. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mr. John Oakes. Okay, we are back with John Oakes. I hope that you enjoyed whatever song, whatever commercial, whatever ad or whatever Letterkills track you just heard. Brand New Man, by the way. I used to teach people how to play that on the guitar. That riff is sick. And I liked Don't Believe, but I don't believe that there were better songs on that record than Brand New Man. Oh,
I agree. Hopefully we should make a request that whatever break we came out of plays Brand New Man as the musical interlude.
I wish. I have no control. I am low level. But I can tell you that Letterkills would fit in with a lot of on Adobe. I know you're kidding. But
I'm going to find a Letterkills song. I'm going to share it whenever I talk about us speaking together today and being together. I'm going to go find something from Letterkills out of the archive and share it out into the world because it's a song and an album and a band that people need to know about.
Well, if you have a Medium t-shirt, I will buy it from you because I would wear it. I'm telling you.
I might have a guitar pick and a couple of mementos, but definitely no t-shirts left at this point. But I will find something in the archives.
Sick. All right. So today, Today is right now June of 2018, but by the time this airs, it'll be July. So what's your day like today?
Juggling and hustling, same way it's always been. It's what I like to say. Finding ways to do events and work that I'm passionate about. And as we've talked about, music, I will describe, like, skateboarding saved my life, music made my career, and motorcycles and motors take me to places that I'm going currently. So I've evolved my career from artist management into producing music festivals and events. And that has really led to a balance between concerts, car shows, motorcycle shows, races, all forms of events that generally involve music. And then on the other hand, the other division, you know, our focus that we have as a company is advertising and marketing. So we'll work with any number of brands to integrate their needs into advertising and marketing programs. And oftentimes that involves some of the events that we produce, and oftentimes it involves nothing that we produce from an event standpoint. So sometimes they cross streams, and other times they're mutually exclusive.
Nice.
And that really is the focus. In 2009, I stopped managing, you know, had to shift focus. So in 2009, I stopped the management part of my career and business to focus on music festivals and events and the advertising and marketing. And, you know, I can't complain. You know, there's been ups and downs and roller coasters and good years and bad years and really great years and down year. You know, it's been a span the gamut, but I'm really happy and excited about the projects, you know, that we're working on today and the things that we're doing.
What are you working on today? Be specific. I'd love to hear.
You know, today, you know, as we're talking, you know, this week, this moment, we just announced a few days ago a big event that we have with Sammy Hagar, High Tide Beach Party and Car Show. So Sammy Hagar has produced an event down in Cabo for the last 20 some odd years at his restaurant there. And because of the limited capacity, he can only sell 500 tickets a day. So the weekend, the 3-day weekend that he has his big birthday bash in Cabo. And we've worked about the last 2 years with the state of California and a local business in Huntington Beach to get the approval from the state of California to have a concert on the beach, feet in sand, drink in the hand. And we've worked through a couple different options and opportunities. And then the opportunity to work with Sammy Hagar came up. So we've got a really like eclectic mix of music, Sammy Hagar, REO Speedwagon, Real Big Fish.
Oh, Roger my God. King, sorry. Makers, like, my favorite band on Warped this summer. My favorite band that uses the word ska in their music. You live in Orange County. They are Orange County to me. I am a Real Big Fish super fan. And Mike Kubios is their publicist. So, sorry, tangent. Love them.
Yeah, I love them as well. I've been to – I can't – but I would exclude Warped Tour because the years that I've spent on the road with Warped, I can't count how many times I've seen Real Big Fish live. But – prior to that, like living in St. Louis, growing up in St. Louis, I mean, I've been to can't count how many times I've seen Real Big Fish live. And there's such a great energy
fun
with their band, and it's fun and, yep. And it's perfect party and hangout on the beach.
I mean, honestly, every time I see them, and I say the same thing for Less Than Jake, it's a party. It's fun. People are smiling, good vibes.
Yeah, that's a great, great way to describe it. So, answer your question. We're working on that. Sammy Hagar's High Tide Beach Party and Car Show. So excited about that. We've got a handful of other events that we do in the motorcycle community, and a handful of different advertising and marketing clients that we're working on. So, just staying busy, juggling and hustling.
Well, I love that term. What I like to say is, I like to turn a dollar into three. So that's what I'm trying to do.
It's the one plus one equals three strategy. Yep.
And the rule of three is, as far as like for guys, like if they say they've slept with 9 women, they've slept with 3. Anyway, that's it. You divide by 3. We just there went there. So anyway, so what else though? I mean, honestly, like for the last segment, all I'm thinking about is like, holy shit, Leather Kills. And this one right now, I'm like, holy shit, Real Big Fish. So what else? Like, what are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow's our pre-sale for the show, so it's all hands on deck.
And by the time this is on, it was already
out. On sale. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, from there, it's a continual evolution. You know, the way I would describe, if there's anybody in the audience, you know, that's listening, that's starting their career or interested in working in the music business and music industry, is, I always say, it's like, follow your passion. You know, if you're not passionate about what you do, I am thankful that I've lived a very exciting life. I've had a lot of great opportunities. Again, I've ridden the roller coaster in business, but every step of the way, I love what I do. You know, it doesn't mean that I enjoy,
sounds like it,
you know, filling out expense reports or doing taxes, but the process of work, you know, creating a live event, working with a musician in the studio, building, you know, brands and marketing. I love the process, you know, the different tentacles and business in my career that I have. Like, I can't complain. And I think giving advice.
I mean, you can complain, but why should you? You know, that's the thing.
Zero to complain about.
No, you know? I mean, we said this on the last show, but I mean, you're choosing your life. You love it. And if you like everything that goes on, you're crazy. So, you know, everything, even if you were getting paid to literally lie down on the couch, you would complain that a pillow hurts sometimes. So no matter what, you're going to have some pros and cons, but you're definitely a way more successful artist manager than I am. And I'm loving what I do. So yeah. There you go.
Being a part of the creative process, being a part of, you know, with live events, with the concerts and events that we put on is providing, I think, music, particularly in events, you know, getting somebody off of their couch, out of their house, outdoors.
It's hard to do.
Is amazing. You know, and some people do it because they love the music. Like, we're talking about Real Big Fish and Letter Kills. We're talking about other people hate their parents. They hate their job. And it's, you know, it's an escape. And there's this escapism associated with coming to the live event. Whatever, that power to me is just so exciting. And seeing, you know, whether it's 30,000 people at the Warped Tour, you know, coming through the gates and enjoying their experience, or it's somebody, you know, standing in line to crack a beer and go sing at the top of their lungs, or if they're folding their hands at the back and they're just soaking it in, that experience that live events and live music gives people just moves me, you know, in the process of marketing, you know, to that.
Well, exciting. Kevin Lyman brought that up, actually. It's funny because you brought up Warped and you brought up getting off the couch, but that was one of his quotes from the Billboard piece. And the reason why I'm able to quote this is I literally just read it this week, but he's like, this is the year every kid got off the couch and went to Warped, 2005. So it's like, if you can, that's why, like, when bands are playing for two or three fans, they should treat it like they're playing Madison Square Garden, because those two or three fans did not have to go. They could have done anything, especially now, which is with television or Netflix or everything. Like, shows aren't being as watched because there's so many options. You're never going to have, like, a MASH finale again. You're never going to, because there aren't just three or four channels. So there's so many options, especially in cities like L.A. or New York or Chicago, where they could be anywhere. And even if it's in, like, Dallas or, like let's actually say even Lawrence, Kansas, where there aren't that many events, you should...
The Bottleneck in Lawrence, Kansas? Is that the name of the venue or a bar there?
Let me look it up as I'm on the phone with you. Lawrence, Kansas, when I was touring, I had no idea how cool it was. It was so cool. Lawrence, Kansas, rock venues. I'm Googling as I'm talking to you. The Bottleneck, Jackpot Saloon, Granada. Boom, boom, boom.
We've, years ago, taken back to the Big Blue Monkey pre-Story of the Year days with trade shows, and did the Bandit shows there a couple of times. So I remember that from, at this point, probably 15, 20 years ago, whatever.
Do I get props for knowing that it's Big Blue Monkey? Because that was non-research. I actually knew it. I'm just fishing for a compliment right now. So I really hope I get
it. I'll text you a photo of the monkey, that blue monkey that's tattooed on my forearm or not my forearm, my shoulder.
God. Dude. So, wow. Was it like a big black and blue monkey when you got the tattoo, because it hurt?
Not quite. Man. It stayed blue for all these years. Still blue, still true.
Go Blue, University of Michigan, and Blue October. All right. So I guess you went down today and tomorrow. So, all right. So if there's a kid right now, and we touched upon this, but we can extend upon it. If there's a kid right now in South Orange County that is in high school that wants to be an artist manager, what advice do you have?
Do the work. Be patient. Don't be lazy, period. You know, like hard work and hustle.
So don't wait for shit to happen.
No, go, you know, and I say that because maybe that's the path in which I followed. And there wasn't even, for me, it wasn't even a path. Like there was no choice. Like I had to do the things that I was doing because I was so passionate about what I was doing. And I think that, you know, if I was to give anybody advice, and I don't, if it's a kid in high school or if it's a 75-year-old grandmother, you know, that it's like, do what you love, period. And especially now with the accessibility, we talked about the digital distribution of music, but the digital distribution of everything, the ability, you know, to start a blog and a podcast and an Instagram page and a Facebook page that's themed around one very specific thing or an amalgamation of things, do it. And there's an audience for it. You can build an audience for it and find a way to monetize it, get sponsored, become an influencer, and do the things that you love. If you love music and you want to be an artist manager, go find one of the bands at your high school or another high school and start working with them. Start helping them.
I agree.
Out flyers, hanging out posters, posting stuff on Instagram, reading. And especially now, I can't imagine the accessibility to information. Like, we had to make mistakes and figure it out. And now you just Google, how do I do?
Which is a double-edged sword, by the way. The ease can, I mean, that's an argument I can make. But yeah, I mean, the information's at your fingertips. There's so many books. There's so many links. There's so many articles. There's podcasts like this one. There's better podcasts than this. There's so many things that you can learn
from. The difference is doing the work.
Yeah, well, I think people are actually more entitled and lazy now. So that's my honest opinion on that. But I'm also 37 and bitter. So for this, I mean, I can tell you, you're going to gain the trust of people that you already have kind of a kinship and community with. So if you want to be an artist manager, maybe try to find ways to work for bands and help them out and gain their trust or gain people's trust in the management world and prove your worth and earn your stripes. Thoughts on that?
Agreed. Do the work, right? It comes down to, especially it's, I don't want to say, I guess I will. It's easier if you're younger, right? If you're in high school or in college where you're still living under the roof of your parents, it's like, go test and learn. Like you have so much life to live. And especially with the age of like current age of modern technology and medicine, you know, like man, I'm same age as you, I'm 37 and I feel like I'm just getting started.
Fuck yeah, you know, dude. Like, wait, when's your birthday?
Chapter one.
When's your birthday?
February.
February of 81?
That's correct.
What, February what?
February 3rd.
Dude, you are a month and 2 days older than me. Our mommies were pregnant together. How do you like that?
Nice.
Wow. That's pretty cool. As the guy on this network, Idobe, because Idobe is the number one alternative streaming network in the world, and most of the people here are younger than me. Most of the hosts are younger than me. So it's nice to talk to someone who's literally a year and 2 days older than me. So thank you. Not a year, shit. See, that just aged me because I'm stupid. A month and 2 days older than me. It's pretty wild.
There you go.
There you go. I guess if you're a kid in London, what advice would Mr. John Oakes have for him?
The advice doesn't change what country it is.
Good answer.
Hard work and passion. Right?
Good. That's what I was hoping you'd say. Thank you. So if you want to do something in, I mean, I guess be a little bit more specific as to hard work and passion. Like what could you do specifically wherever you are? More specifics.
I think, and we're talking specifically to somebody younger, you know.
Not even necessarily younger.
Involved in the music business.
Well, I became an artist manager 3 years ago,
okay,
and I'm a month younger than you, so.
So, my advice be if referencing my background, I decided early on in life that I wasn't a musician, right? And so your path is a little bit different than mine. I was always a business operator. Like as a kid, finding a way to hustle something, buy it, fix it, flip it. And so for me, marketing and sales has been a big part of my life. But I love music and I love skateboarding and I love motorcycles and cars, you know, like motorsports. So those passions drive my focus. And it's because I'm passionate about a few specific things and I've projected my time into those things, I love the work that I do. And having the opportunity to give anyone advice is do those things that you love and find, you know, and especially if you're not a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist, I'll quote my mentor, business partner and friend, John Reese, right? Nobody's going to die on the operating table if you're trying to promote a band.
Show. It's nothing is life or death. Our stuff is, that's why I put my phone on airplane mode an hour before I go to bed. Because there's literally nothing I could do. If a client called me and said, hey, a truck fell on my head and I have no arms or legs, I mean, that'd be fucking awful. But what I would say is, why are you calling me? Call 911.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
And I think that's the advice that I give is, I mean, if you're not in a mission critical life support role, go make a mistake and learn. Yep. And I think the advice that I would give, you know, and we're talking my way into your answer is start a journal, a blog, a notebook of every mistake that you make, right? Everything key learning for the day, right? Fuck it up and figure it out. Make a mistake,
nice.
Learn from it, pick up the pieces.
You learn best
on,
from
and
a
do
fuck
it better
up.
The next time.
You learn, but I have fucked up a bunch in every job that I've done. And my biggest fuck up as an artist manager, I learned the most from.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's the thing. The things that I've made mistakes on in my career, I've learned more from than the things that have gone successful. And, you know, and in learning, testing and learning and trying new things and, you know, find out what works. And luckily, we're in an age now where there's digital analytics for almost everything that you do. If you do something to promote the band on Facebook or Instagram, look at the insights, look at the analytics. Did it work? Did it reach people? How do you change? Did it convert to sale? Did the person...
How long did they click on it? How long did they watch it? How long everything? Yeah. Metrics are scary, dude.
And so finding, you know, those ways to help and to change and to, you know, create a vision to get music to people, to create a culture, to me, it's all fun and exciting and testing and learning. And
sounds like you really like it though. I mean, speaking of culture, I mean, I don't care. I'll talk about Warped some more. That's a culture. And for us, cause I could say us, me and you, cause I'm assuming you graduated high school in 99, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Me too.
Absolutely.
So for my culture where I grew up on Long Island, I remember that in middle school, like the first bands that I learned on guitar were Nirvana, Weezer and Green Day in eighth grade. And that was in 94 when, you know, Green Day was blowing up and Offspring was about to be huge. And then in the mid 90s, No Doubt and Sublime took over the world. And that's how I knew about Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake. And then the late 90s, in my high school, at least, it was like Dave Matthews Band was the biggest thing ever. And Korn and Limp Bizkit were about to take over. What about you?
I'm sure Dave Matthews Band was big to people in my high school, but it was so far off my music spectrum that, of course, I was aware of Dave Matthews. But man, for me in high school, I was a hardcore punk, you know, like going
like Minor Threat,
H2O, and Suicide Machines.
That's New York, dude. H2O. I saw Suicide Machines at Irving Plaza with Memphis Scoffolies on the Battle Hymns tour, and I went to U of M, Michigan. Destruction by Definition is a top five ska punk record for me. Definitely.
I would say Destruction by Definition is for me personally, is probably a, you know, top 10, definitely top 20 album of all time, just for influence.
I like you. Moment. I like you a lot. Thank you. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. But in my, man, if I put together my list though, my list is all over the place. Like it'll include, you know, Pantera, H2O,
Pantera,
Suicide Machines,
just a
and
loss.
Then Michael Jackson, you know?
I would say that for me, My band, the best band I've ever seen is Silverchair, without a shred of doubt. But I'm talking about like my favorite bands slash records. Would be, I'd say Beatles, Jimmy Eat World, Weezer, Green Day, and Nirvana. I'd say those are like my favorites. And that makes sense because like that was the music I listened to in middle school. And Beatles are music that I was probably breastfed to. So it's
And you know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about the Beatles, and even if the Beatles were a brand new band today, it would be a smash.
Well, they're undeniable hits, undeniable, and they did it smart.
There's no question. Like the legacy and the creativity and the hooks and the songwriting and just the magic.
Yep.
And there's things like that that are just timeless.
They opened with the fluff before they got to the substantive stuff. They did a bunch of the "She Loves You," the "Please Please Me," the "I Want to Hold Your Hand." And then they got real, and their fans grew with them. And my advice to bands is, like, if you have a hit record for the first time, more of the same, just better production and better songs. And then album three, do whatever the fuck you want. That's my theory. So we're going to cut this off. So how can people check out you or Freeze or anything? How can people find out?
Man, I'm a little elusive. The things that we do, I'm on social, Facebook and Instagram, but I don't really, you know, I guess I somewhat have a public profile there, but it's more like an industry, personal, friends and family. So find me on Facebook, John Oakes. Find me on Instagram, John Oakes.
I just did.
It's not very interesting.
It's a picture of a chair on the beach,
dude. I'm not a good follow.
There's a picture on the beach. I think that's interesting. Looking right now, there's a bike and it says Party Zone, a motorcycle rally. It looks interesting to me. I think you're diminishing people's expectations.
So that's probably the easiest answer. And just watch what we're doing. Some of the events and things from an operations standpoint, I'm happy to be the behind the scenes guy wearing the black t-shirt, and I don't need my face or personality, you know, pushed into it. We do hard work, good work, and you know, try to continually evolve. Just the same things I'm saying now. I feel like I'm at the beginning of my career at 37 and just starting, you know, where we're going to be, you know, and where I'm going to be in the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. I'm going to build a bridge and live forever. Technology is going to take me there, and I'll just keep on working and doing the things I love.
Well, I appreciate that. And you're doing something I love, which is being on the show. So every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock our time in South Orange County and in West Los Angeles, where I live, and in North Hollywood, where this is recorded, every Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, reruns every single Sunday morning at five. So we have Sunday morning. That's no doubt. Sunday morning at 5 a.m., 8 a.m. Eastern time. You can go on the iTunes podcast app, download every episode for free, subscribe, go to adobe.com, stream everything. John, give me an adjective to describe this interview and we will call it a day.
Amazing.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, I just had a voice crack with a lack of a voice. So I'm going to say flattered.
I agree.
All right, man.
Amazingly flattered. Have a great day. And thanks
you too.
For listening. Thanks for talking.
Hey, John, I'm a brand new man.
There you go. I'm going to go dig up Letter Kills right now.
That's a good note to end on. Bye.
Perfect. Thanks.